Okay, so Alan, I think maybe an interesting place to start would be how almost every AA meeting starts. And you have something in front of you called a preamble. Can you tell us what that is and then maybe read it out to us? And we'll see where we go from there, I suppose.
Well, it's just a short statement of what AA is and how it functions, and it emphasizes very much the singleness of purpose of AA. So I'll just read it out verbatim. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Well, and I mean, the thing for me that's the most mysterious aspect of AA, it's in the name, it's the anonymous part to it. Before we get into any of your own story, Alan, like, why has it been kept anonymous? Or what does the anonymous in Alcoholics Anonymous mean? Like, what's that all about?
Well, they got the name initially when they were writing the big book, which we'll get on to recently. People come up with various names. The most common one was The Way Out, but somebody went to the Library of Congress and found out there were 14 titles already there. And somebody else had suggested the name Alcoholics Anonymous without any connotations. So they decided to adopt that because there was no other book of that name. But over the years, it has gained tremendous significance. On a very basic level, it means anyone is free to come to AA without giving any details. You're not asked your second name. If you want to make up a first name, that's fine. We don't want to know anything about you. We don't keep any records. So it's anonymous on that level to encourage people to feel free to approach us and guarantee that their anonymity is protected. But it means much more to that. It's a spiritual principle, anonymity. It means everybody in AA is equal. It doesn't matter if you're a long time in AA or a week, you're of equal importance. And so nobody in AA achieves prominence. You know, it's to keep the ego in check. Everybody's anonymous, and we're all equal. And we have a particular principle. There are traditions on which AA is run, which run parallel to the steps, which we'll get on to later. And one of them is we maintain anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. And so we adhere to that.
Yeah, which is why today we're not sharing a photograph of yourself and we're not sharing
Exactly.
your second name.
Yes. Even though I am widely famous, nobody needs to know who
And
I am.
deeply good looking. Honestly, you people listening, you've no
Absolutely.
idea what you're missing out on today. It is just a sight to behold. It's like Brad
Absolutely.
Pitt and later in life, you know.
Absolutely.
This idea of the ego, I've heard this come up time and time and time again around the 12-step program from people who've experienced tremendous success from it. Can you speak to me a wee bit about why that might be?
Well, it says in the big book that the purpose of the steps is to deflate our ego. All the steps ask us to, they run contrary to our nature. The alcoholic nature would tend towards being bombastic and trying to be in control. So the whole point of recovery is to deflate the ego, and the steps run contrary to our nature in that they ask us to deflate that. Also, the traditions, which leads us into the principle of anonymity. You can't become a personality even in AA. You know, one of the great traditions talks about principles before personalities. We keep AA first and ourselves second. And if you want to have any long-term recovery, then it's important to acquire a little humility. That's the basis of it all, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm also interested in this idea in ego, like, as you say, even from the organizational perspective, the fact that no one can really rise to prominence. It's a very countercultural way of like leadership or organizational structure, or whatever kind of buzzword you want to throw at it. Yet AA, without a doubt, is probably the most remarkable social movement we've seen in the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there hasn't been these big personalities driving it. There hasn't been this big top-heavy structure and all these kind of things. It has been the definition of grassroots. And even this book that you have in front of you here, referred to as the Big Book, like, how many copies has this sold? How many people have got their hands on this? Because that in itself is actually frighteningly powerful.
Well, it's 35 million copies worldwide and counting. Excuse me. And they reckon over 2 million recoveries in AA. So, like, those are remarkable statistics, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, the 12 steps, before we get into, we're not going to do a breakdown of every single one of them, but I said to you before we started recording, I'm halfway through the Big Book.
Mm-hmm.
It was recommended to me by a neuroscientist of all people who said, like, you really got to check this out. And I've never had a problem with alcohol, but I have had problems of addiction of many sorts that people on the show have heard me talk about before, really for most of my adult life. And I was so surprised. Two things really stood out to me. The first one was how relatable some of the content was. Even though we're talking about a completely different drug of choice, found myself nodding and agreeing and being really profoundly moved by some of the stuff I was reading. But the second thing was that none of the 12 steps really has to do with drink. So what I mean by that is, like, from an outsider perspective, I was expecting the 12 steps to be like, step number one, remove all alcohol from your house. Step number two, stop going to the pub. You know, I thought it would be really specifically to do with drink, and it's totally not. It's more like, as you say, it's like a pathway to humility and to deflate the ego that is really more of a spiritual program that I think anybody on the planet could benefit from.
It's very much a spiritual program. It's referred to as that in the Big Book, you know. We see alcoholism as a twofold illness. You know, it is classified by the World Health Organization as an illness, third biggest killer disease in the world.
Wow.
So we see it as twofold. It's a physical allergy coupled with a mental obsession. The physical allergy is, I have something within me. I don't know where it came from. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's activated by one drink of alcohol. Once I take a drink of alcohol, I have no control over how much I drink thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
The mental obsession is in the full knowledge of how I reacted to alcohol, because none of us are stupid. I had this strange mental twist that would say, but it'll be different next time.
Mm.
I know last time was a complete and utter disaster, but it'll be different this time. And I would sally forth again with another different approach to try and control my drinking, and I would drink again and spark off the physical allergy. What AA tackles is the mental obsession. The AA recovery program, written by the first 100 members, they got together in 1939, after been going for 4 years, and said, what are the actions that we have taken which have resulted in us, A, getting sober, and B, staying sober?
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to write it down in a book as a great means of communication, no internet or anything in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a result of actions taken. But as they say in the Big Book, alcohol is but a symptom of a deeper lying problem.
Mm.
You know, there's more to recovery than simply stopping drinking. You've got to get down to causes and conditions. And that's where the 12 steps come in, you know.
I mean, what a job they would have had to try and condense all of their learnings. Like, 12 steps is extremely efficient, I imagine. You know, you could have had a list of 200, but the fact that they broke it down, and it's, you know, if you look at the 12, there's nothing that could be removed from it. And in some ways you're thinking, you know, if we were to add something to this, what actually would we add? So, like, it's amazing that they were able to kind of condense it down to what it is today, you know. Well, the proof's in the pudding.
It's amazing when you look at the history of AA. Like, nobody sat down and thought, oh, I think I'll invent Alcoholics Anonymous. There were a series of events which came together. You might regard as coincidental. Some might regard as divinely inspired.
Sure.
A series of events came together to result in an Alcoholics Anonymous coming into being in the form of the two co-founders, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. It started off with two people. And as the preamble states our singleness of purpose. That's what AA is based on. One alcoholic talking to another.
Mm.
That's the whole cornerstone. That's the basis of its success. You know, Bob was very reluctant to meet with Bill. He had to be coerced, I think, a good bit by his wife. So he said he would reluctantly give this guy from New York 5 minutes of his time. And when he met, they talked for hours.
Mm.
And when questioned about it afterwards, he said it was because it was the first person he'd ever spoken to who could speak to him directly from his own experience.
Wow.
You know, Bob was a doctor and a surgeon, and he'd used various methods and put a lot of effort into it to try and counteract his problem. It got nowhere until he met Bill. And that's the basis of AA to this day. There'll be somebody turning up at an AA meeting tonight for the first time.
Wow.
And this is where we can gain the person's trust, where we share. We don't counsel, we share. You know, it's a two-way thing. That's what impressed me the first night I came to AA. The two guys who sat down and talked to me were alcoholics. They were speaking to me from their own experience. I could relate to what they were saying. As I say in AA, I could identify.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that happened to me. Or more importantly, I felt like that.
Yeah,
I could tell from looking at them and by their demeanor that something had happened to them, that they had recovered.
Yeah.
And then one of them looked me straight in the eye and he said to me, "We can guarantee you that you will recover, provided you do what we suggest." And that blew me away. You know, nobody had ever said that to me before. I'd been to see quite a few doctors and a couple of psychiatrists before that.
Yeah, sure.
Good people who did their absolute best, you know, but nobody ever said that to me before.
The exact stat is going to escape me right now, but the fact that they were able to guarantee that is so surprising, because if you look at the rate of recovery from addiction across the board, it's tragically low.
Yeah.
It's ridiculously low.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there is a program that people can turn to that has that level of confidence is amazing. Yeah. So I've heard a lot of people talk about like a sponsor. What is a sponsor? Can you maybe unpack what that is for us?
Well, a sponsor, there's AA doesn't just have the Big Book. It has a whole range of literature, and there's a pamphlet on sponsorship, which I would always suggest to a new person to read, which outlines it. It's somebody who's obviously been in AA for a while. It's no good somebody who's a week longer than you, who's been in AA for a while, who has applied themselves to the 12 steps of recovery, and who can use that experience to take you through the steps.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a guide. They don't counsel. They don't give advice. We just share. You know, it's always a two-way system. I had a very old friend in AA who was a long time in AA, and if somebody new asked them to sponsor me, he says, "Yes, I'll sponsor you, provided you sponsor me." It's very much a two-way thing.
Yeah.
But it's a guide to take you through the somebody who can take you through the steps.
So that point on the two-way nature of the relationship, that's something that also surprised me as I'm going through Big Book, is the fact that it's emphasized time and time again that part of the success of your own recovery is somewhat dependent on you helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like part of it is you can't just be a consumer, but you have to also walk alongside somebody else or other people for the sake of your own recovery. What's going on there? Why do you think that works?
Well, the basic saying in AA is you've got to give it away to keep it. You know, the entire 12th step is about carrying the message to alcoholics. You know, having had a spiritual awakening, to go back to your point about it being a spiritual program, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That's up in the ante even more. But the whole emphasis is on AA, as in carrying the message to other. And it's the best way to guarantee your own sobriety. But it's also a tremendously joyful thing. There's nothing as pleasing as seeing a new person come into AA and you start to interact with them and you're involved in some way, be it a small way or a large way, in their recovery. That is the most tremendous thing to see. It's very joyful. And it also reinforces to me the message of recovery. Look there, you know, it's happening to somebody else. So it is a selfless program, as we've talked about, but getting rid of self. And the best way to do that is to think about other people.
Yeah.
Or to try to think about other people and to put that into practice.
Absolutely. So let's change gears a little bit. Two questions for you, I suppose, and we can tackle them in as long or short as you want to. I suppose the first one is, when did you discover that you were allergic to alcohol, to use your language?
Yep.
And then the second question, which is very key and often comes much later, is when did you decide to get help, or what prompted you to go and attend an AA meeting?
Well, the two things happened at the same time. You know, I had my first drink when I was 13.
Mm-hmm. As most people listening in this country have.
I was a late starter down the part of the country I come from. I was late getting going. And by the time I was 18, people were saying to me, were drawing attention to the fact that my drinking wasn't normal. My reaction was to get very, very angry, because I was in complete denial. And that kept going for the next 10 years until I was 28. And my alcoholism became more apparent to other people. Various people decided to approach me about the subject and get met with the usual explosion of anger and how dare you?
Yeah.
Things started to happen. It started to impact more and more in my life. It affected my job. I had a good job. It affected my personal relationships very badly. Until one day I stand in a pub not too far from here, and I had this moment of clarity, a moment of realization, you know, a psychic change, a spiritual awakening. It was just a moment of complete clarity. And I went from complete denial to complete acceptance in about 5 seconds. Two simple phrases came into my head. I am an alcoholic and I need help.
Wow.
It was instantaneous. And I put the glass down on the counter and I haven't had a drink from that day to this because I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, now if you'd said to me 2 seconds before that realization, do you think you're an alcoholic, or even do you think you have a drink? Probably you'd have been met with the usual explosion of anger.
Yeah.
So it was a remarkable event. Just, I hit rock bottom. They talk in AA about hitting rock bottom, and the thing is, it's such an individual thing. You can't specify it, or you can't really explain it. It can mean different things to different people. That just emotionally, I hit rock bottom, and something inside me said, "Right, that's it. That's enough."
Yeah, I know it's very hard to put words to the mystical, for lack of a better term. Why do you think in that moment you had that clarity?
Well, it's something I pondered a lot. You know, like, I can't really explain it. Yeah. We talk in AA about a higher power. You could suggest that it was a gift from a higher power, you know. I don't think about it too much. I'm just immensely grateful that it happened. You know, prior to that, I'd gone through stages of alcoholism where alcohol ceased to work. I could get drunk physically, but I couldn't blot out the mental and emotional, and I sort of ran out of people to hide behind. But these are just factors that led to that rock bottom.
Yeah.
Now, if you talk to people in AA, everybody would tell you a different experience of that realization.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to get that, you know, it's very, very difficult for families who are dealing with the problem, because people around me have told me this, you know, it was absolutely frustrating and horrific to say, surely if we point this out to this idiot, you know, he will see what we're talking about. And I just couldn't see it. You know, the last person to see the problem was me until I had that realization.
Yeah.
And I've never doubted from that day to this that I'm alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
This is maybe quite a heavy question, but do you think people can experience recovery without the rock bottom experience?
Well, I know I couldn't have. It would have been very difficult. You know, there might well have been a doubt in the back of my mind. Luckily enough, I had tried every single method I could think of prior to that. Never to stop drinking, but to control my drinking.
Yeah.
You know, if I had put the same amount of time and effort into starting a business, I'd be now talking to you from the Bahamas. You know, they say an alcoholic has no willpower. I exerted immense willpower, but it was to no effect, because you're dealing with an illness.
Yeah.
You know, you can't use willpower against an illness.
Yeah. We all use various drugs for various different reasons. Mm-hmm. And you hear the terms kind of self-medicating being thrown around a lot. You obviously have had time to think about it. Mm-hmm. In general terms, are you able to pull out and kind of see now what you would have been self-medicating against?
Well,
maybe
you'll hear this a million times in AA. If you ever go to a meeting, I grew up, I felt different.
Mm.
You know, I felt socially inept. I felt I couldn't communicate. I felt isolated. Mm. Now, having gone through a good bit of recovery, I can see why. Mm. I had isolated myself from people. I grew up in a nice family, you know, good parents, lovely wider family, good education, people who are very socially open, mm-hmm. and who were inviting me to join in. And there's me in my little cocoon saying, I wonder why I feel isolated.
Mm.
So the first time I discovered alcohol, as a friend of mine, people probably won't remember this reference, like the old Ready Breck ad. You know, everything goes from black and white into color.
Like a Wizard of Oz moment.
Yeah. Like the first time I had a drink, I remember thinking, this is it.
Wow.
This is what I've been missing. You know, I felt it was an illusion, of course.
Yeah.
An illusion of freedom.
Yeah.
And I remember making a conscious decision, I'm going to drink this stuff at every possible opportunity because it produces such a great effect. So I did.
Yeah.
But A, it was an illusion, and B, it turned on me, you know?
Yeah. I was talking to a fella recently, and he was saying that he was describing his first drink, and he described it as if someone put a warm blanket over him for the first time in his life. I thought that was very moving.
Yeah. I heard a guy talking on a tape. He had his first drink with his brother. They stole a bottle out of their dad's drink.
Yeah.
So he's drinking this stuff saying, wow. And the brother's saying, that stuff's horrible.
Is that it?
You know, it tastes awful.
Yeah.
So guess who turned out to be the alcoholic out of those two siblings?
But this is why I really like the language you use of allergy.
Hmm.
Because, you know, picture whatever scene it was for you. We're all 12. We're all at the party, or we're all wherever we are, and everyone's having a drink, and only one or two people are having that massive experience, and everyone else is just like, is that what all the fuss is about? You know, so whenever you say, you know, you said that I am an alcoholic, and you kind of said that in the present tense. I only know this from movies, so part of this conversation is to help me kind of connect what Hollywood has taught me about AA and the reality of AA.
Yeah,
and maybe we could talk a bit about that. But in the movies, you see people and they go in and they say, hi, my name is Matthew and I'm an alcoholic. Is that a traditional way that the meetings will actually, is that something the meetings will do?
Yeah, that's how you introduce yourself. There's usually a speaker. There are different types of meetings. There's usually a speaker at a meeting, and then people around the room are called to speak. And you start off by saying, yeah, my name's Alan, I'm an alcoholic. It's just, it's a little reminder, you know.
So the permanence of that is what strikes me, because there is kind of, you know, like new age psychology, and they're all kind of saying, like, you know, you shouldn't speak labels over yourself, and, you know, you shouldn't carry these burdens over you. You should kind of speak the opposite, where people would say, like, oh, maybe like an affirmation, like, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not an alcoholic, I'm not an alcoholic. But what AA has shown is that approach does not work. So why does the constant repetition or reminder of that? What does that do for you?
Well, the physical allergy is still there.
Mm.
You know, it's still there. Medical science hasn't found an answer. It may do so one day, but it hasn't done so yet. So the physical allergy is still there, and I have to be aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
If I drink again, the same thing's going to happen. Or there's a school of thought which says you won't pick up where you left off. You'll pick up as if you'd been drinking in all that interim period, you know.
Mm.
I remember listening to a friend of mine who was about 40 years sober at the time, and a social worker was quizzing him about his alcoholism. And she said, what would happen if you took a drink today after 40 years? She said, the police would be here inside half an hour. And she said, why is that? He says, well, that's the way it always used to be. You know, so nothing has changed.
Yeah.
You know, so the physical allergy is still there. What AA tackles is the mental obsession. So I'd like to read something else out. This is one of my favorite parts of the Big Book. The Big Book is something that we like to study.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a great reader. So when I joined AA, somebody gave me the Big Book and I read it. I read books like that.
Devoured it, yeah.
I read it. No, it's just to be studied. And I go back to it. And the amazing thing is, every time I go back to it, I find that they've put stuff in there since the last time I read it. You think, I wasn't there the last time, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Just a quick little interruption for me. So interestingly, this is an audio-only show, so just to add a little bit of colour, like Alan's holding in his hand a page that he's ripped out from the book. That in itself signifies something to me, so please go ahead.
Well, it's not from my original Big Book. It's fallen to bits, but I've got this. You know, as I say, what I like about AA, it's a practical program.
Yeah.
It's based on action. The first 100 members said, this is what we did in order to recover. And if you do it, you also will recover. So that's what I love about it. It's not it is spiritual, but it's not mystical.
Yeah,
it's not
woo-woo all over the place. No. It's like, no. Step one, step two, step action. Three.
Yeah. It says, here are the steps we took, which are suggestive of a method of recovery. And this is the end product. You know, if I do this, it says, step 12, I'm guaranteed I will have a spiritual awakening. It's experience or awakening? I should know that. But this is what happens. Again, I want to quote, because people to this day will say to me, don't you miss it? You know, don't you miss... The answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Or they think you're fighting it.
Yeah.
But like to spend every day fighting alcohol would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once before coming to AA, I thought I would stop on my own and I lasted a day and a half.
Yeah.
And it was a nightmare.
It's that white knuckle experience. You can only hold on for
short windmills, time. You know, I couldn't sit. You know, it was agony and I just had to go and take a drink.
Yeah.
So you don't miss, you know, you're not fighting it. And this is what I love about it. It says, quote, we are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. This is our experience.
Mm.
You see, and that perfectly sums up my experience of being an AA. It's no longer a part of my life, like you were saying, the guy who was drug addicted said to you.
Yeah.
It's just not a part of your life anymore. So you can go about your life and get on with life and become a responsible citizen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this then. You describe as a child, you know, the Ready Breck ad, life in black and white, take a drink and all of a sudden there's the colour. Now, 40 or so years into your sobriety, is it 40 or so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's life like now? Have you learned to accept and find the beauty in the grey, or have you found something else to add colour to life?
I've definitely found something else to add colour to life. You know, life has meaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a completely different way of life, which I didn't know about before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's colour and imagination. You get involved in life. You don't avoid anything, which means you experience the you know, the so-called bad stuff as well as the good.
Mm-hmm.
And it has enabled me to do things that I normally wouldn't have done. You know, I've travelled extensively and I've gone back to school. I've added to my education. Mm-hmm. And but still, the great joy is being an AA and seeing new people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great experience. So it does give you a completely different way of, a spiritual way of life, to use that word again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a, you know, host of friends, people I've known for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you a lot.
Yeah.
It really does give you a lot.
So that's kind of what I was thinking about or trying to get at was, you know, you think of a 13-year-old now who hasn't had their first drink yet, who has that allergy. Is there anything you could do for them to help them experience the color that you experience now? Or do they have to walk up that mountain themselves of recovery?
No, well, like AA wouldn't really get into that, you know.
Yeah.
We're not about prevention. It's just the AA singleness of purpose is that we offer a simple method of recovery to people who are alcoholic. You know, there are other marvellous agencies that deal with, you know, other aspects, so...
I appreciate your singularity and your clear purpose and focus. Alan, no, that's great. That's really great. Very nice.
But the other thing I'd like to emphasise is about the uniqueness of AA, but its structure. You know, there are no dues or fees for AA membership. It's free.
Mm.
It's you see, if we were charging money for AA, they'd be queuing around the block.
True.
It's completely free. There are no dues or fees. We're entirely self-supporting through our own contributions. We don't own any property. We don't have vast reserves of money. Actually, there's about an interesting story about that. Back in the early days, the boys got in contact with John D. Rockefeller.
Yes.
One of the richest men in the world.
That's right.
Great philanthropist. And he arranged a dinner for them, to which he invited New York's business elite. So Bill and the boys could just see dollar signs and thinking, you know, a chain of hospitals, treatment centres,
sure,
you know. And Rockefeller's spokesman stood up at the dinner and said, Mr. Rockefeller has studied this and he thinks it's wonderful, but he thinks money would spoil it.
Wow.
So you're not getting any. But they learned from that and they adopted the policy of being entirely self-supporting.
Mm.
And the other thing about the structure of the AA is it's upside down. You know, if you can make the shape of a triangle, like everything from government to the snooker club has a triangle with the apex pointing upwards.
Yeah.
And as you get towards the upper echelons, you have a title and you have power and you can issue edicts to the AA's upside down. The power in AA lies in the groups.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a service structure. And you will get a title, but it doesn't mean you're in authority. It just means you have a job to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a great principle of rotation. You do the job for a specified period of time, and then you go step back again.
Wow.
And then you get constantly demoted back to private, that's unique.
Yeah.
But it seems to work.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem to work. It does work.
Yeah. I was just thinking about the preamble that you read again, and there's a word jumped out to me that I never kind of thought of before, and it was the key word desire. You have to have a desire to stop drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all know friends and stories and examples where the community around somebody has tried to force them to stop, and it just doesn't work until they want to themselves.
That is a big indefinable.
Yeah.
Umpteen people say to me, what can I do to make him or her see? I say, oh, sorry, you know, I don't know the answer. I really don't know the answer. It must be. I can look back now and see how incredibly frustrating it must be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a boss. whom I went to see, a part of the recovery program is you make amends to the people that you've harmed in the past. You've got to clear up the past. There's no way you can stay sober while you're carrying the past with you. So part of it is that you contact the people that you've hurt and you make amends to them. So I had this long-suffering boss, dear love him, and I definitely owed him an amends. And I wasn't too keen on him when I worked there because I thought he interfered too much. So I very reluctantly went to see him, but I still went to see him because I knew, this is what you have to do.
Got to work the program.
If you want the end product, you got to put in the work. So I went to see this man. And nobody I made amends to knew, tuned in as much as to what I was doing and why I was doing it. But he said something to me I would do well to remember. He said, you know, it was horrific for us to sit here and watch you destroying yourself and not being able to do anything to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly realised all the times I thought he was interfering, he was trying to help.
Mm.
And, you know, and I got... You do get an inkling of how much you've affected other people.
Yeah.
And my standard answer to that question is, if I could answer that question, I would also be speaking to you once again from the Bahamas, because I would patent the idea, you know.
Yeah.
How do you make a person see?
Yeah.
But that's where Al-Anon comes in. It runs parallel to AA, and it's for the families of alcoholic. It's the same principle. You contact them and... You can get help, again, from people who are directly experiencing what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people moved heaven and earth to get me to seek help. They pleaded, they threatened, they cajoled, they cried. Above all, they encouraged.
Yeah.
Just met with a complete brick wall of denial. You know, it must be very frustrating.
Oh, mate.
You know?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Something that really... sticks out to me about the program is the level of self-awareness it forces you to have, and the level of, what's the right word, taking a self-inventory that I think probably only people in recovery experience to the full level, or maybe like some monks somewhere or something, I don't know, but it really stands out to me that this idea of even taking a daily inventory or inventory of your past, as you mentioned earlier, people who you've hurt, people you need to make amends to, that's what I was saying at the start of the show. Like, I think we all could benefit from some of these principles that, and in your language, would add a lot more color to our lives, whether you're an alcoholic or you're not.
Well, in our case, you just have to do it. You know, if you want to recover, this is what you have to do. I sought out a sponsor. And I got his help, and he got me working on the program. His big catchphrase was immediate action, no cause for delay. Let's get on with this.
Nice.
And he got me working on it. And the only reason I took an inventory was because I had to do it. I wasn't keen on doing it, but I did it. And self-honesty, they say, rigorous self-honesty is the key to sobriety. I'd never done that before, never dared to look, so I just... Look, but all the time other people are sharing with you and your sponsor's sharing with you. He's not looking down at you from some hilltop.
Yeah.
He's sharing with you. So you get rid of that feeling of being unique, of being different, and you realize I'm among equals here. And eventually you get it done. You sit down and you write it down, and then you go and share it with another person, which is... And the great thing is, none of these things are as difficult as you anticipate.
Okay.
No, you look at them and you think, oh my God, that's a big deal. You go and do it and you realize, you know, it's no big deal. And also, while you're sharing your inventory, the person is sharing back with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a two-way thing. And it's the most wonderful feeling when you're finished. You know, it's an essential part of recovery. It says in the big book, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking.
Wow.
So that's, you know, I had great motivation to take the actions.
Yeah.
Because I did not want to go back to what I had experienced when I was drinking. It was horrific. Terror, frustration, and bewilderment, despair.
Mm-hmm.
it talks about in the big book. It was in. So that's a great motivation at the start. Then, of course, as you get on, why do you do it? Because you want to. Start to experience the fruits of recovery, and you say, this is pretty good. But you gotta keep taking the inventory. You got to keep growing, unfortunately. You know?
Yeah, I heard, what was it recently? I think it was an Albert Einstein quote, and it was like, life is like a bicycle. You have to keep moving forward to keep your balance, or something like that.
I said, you stop pedaling.
Yeah.
Or as my sponsor used to say, if you don't grow, you'll go.
Wow.
You know, AA's full of these little sayings.
I know. It's class. Really is class. But like, that level of honesty, yeah, we've already said to have that with yourself, but to have it with another person, to have it with a group of people. Like, it's so rare and refreshing. You know, you talk about wearing masks these days. You know, we wear masks our whole lives. And I'd say very few people listening have really had the experience of being able to share warts and all of their lives with another person and be met with a thanks for sharing, as opposed to a judgment, you know?
Yeah. Well, somebody famous who I can't remember said that. It was to just be completely yourself with another person. It might have been Jung, Carl Jung. Carl Jung got a hand at the start of AA, you know.
Something with Bill or something? Did someone go to try to be treated by him and Jung was like, nah, I can't help you?
There's a man called Roland Hazard.
Okay.
Way back in the 30s. Very wealthy family. Took himself off to Zurich.
Yeah.
Had the money to place himself under Jung's care for a year, imagine. Getting a lot of money. Jung gave him his best shot, went back to America thinking, great, I'm fine, and got drunk inside a very short space of time. Come back to Jung, who said, I've given you everything I have. You're a hopeless case. I have never seen anybody like you recover unless I suggest you go back to the States and get involved in some kind of spiritual movement. He says, that's the only... He talked about a psychic phenomenon, a psychic displacement. Get involved with something altruistic.
Yeah.
It's spiritual that you can... So Roland did that, and he got involved with this group. And Bill eventually came in contact with another member from this group. Roland helped a guy called Ebby.
Okay.
Ebby was an old drinking buddy of Bill's.
Ah.
Ebby called to see Bill. And so the chain started.
Nice.
But Bill was the man who, he broke away from this, and he was one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
The chain right down to me sitting here today.
Wow.
Or somebody who's going to turn up at a meeting tonight in Belfast.
Yeah.
And get sober.
I really liked what you said earlier about how the fact that it's anonymous is, it removes a potential obstacle for somebody to go to a meeting tonight. I would love to hear some of your thoughts around this idea of a higher power, because I also think that this is a big obstacle some people have for taking part in AA, because they say, I don't believe in God, or they say, I'm not a Christian, and they get really specific. But my understanding is the higher power is quite a broad umbrella.
Yeah.
But you could probably clarify that for me.
The realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, and all-inclusive. It is open, we believe, to all men. Quote from the big book.
There you go.
You know, so it is. It's open to all men. You know, I didn't believe in anything when I came here. And that's the big thing about AA. Funny, I was on the internet before I came here, and people said, well, what about AA and what about this God stuff? Well, you can be atheist and agnostic, and it's no barrier to AA.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who's 50 years sober in a month's time, another buddy, and he's a devout atheist, but it has been no barrier to him being an AA, you know. I didn't believe in anything when I came here, but under the lash of alcoholism, it's a great thing, it's a great incentive, you know, to open your mind to various concepts. And at the start, my higher power was a group. Mm-hmm. You realize the obsession to drink has disappeared, such as I've read out. My goodness, how did that happen? I realized that the collective of the group was a power greater than me. Mm-hmm. So I went along with that for a while. And then the advice in AA is just, again, it's very practical. It's just do it. You know, I approached my sponsor for help once about something and he told me to pray about it. Mm-hmm. I said, not keen on that kind of stuff, you know. So he gave me the classic AA advice, just do it. You don't have to believe in it, just do it. Mm-hmm. And I did it and it worked.
Wow.
It was about getting rid of our resentment. So you gradually open your mind to these things. You know, if I can get very personal about it, I came up against a lot of barriers against, you know, what you're brought up with society, you know, specific ideas.
Sure.
But say it's God as you understand him or higher power. And I embarked on this mission of reading as much as I could on the subject. Mm-hmm. So I've read every major scripture that there is. And then what I discovered from reading all these comparative texts, I discovered two things. Now, this is a very much a personal opinion, I've got to say this. They're all saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's about love and action. And the great realization was, and it's said in the AA Big Book in very simple language. Mm-hmm. You know, in really simple language that anybody can understand. So it brought me full circle back to the Big Book. But it is a spiritual program, however you interpret that, you know.
Yeah.
As we said right at the start.
Yeah. Interesting wee image popped into my head there. And you talked about, you know, there's many different ways to go up the mountain, but they all lead to the same place. I think a lot of us, particularly these days, are looking for the gondola up the mountain. We're looking for the shortcut, you know what I mean? Shortcut, we're looking for the little helicopter that'll just fly us up there.
Yeah.
And based on everything I've seen, that just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's usually the long, hard, stupid way is eventually what leads to the top. But, and I kind of shadowed this earlier, but I do want to come back to it. Do you think, or would you say that taking this long path up the mountain has ultimately been a worthy journey beyond just overcoming your alcoholism? Mm.
Oh, I've already talked about, you know, that there's so much more to it. It talks in the book about experiencing a life beyond your wildest dreams.
Mm.
And that's what happened, you know. I saw a good cartoon. The AA has a magazine called The Grapevine.
Okay.
And I saw a great cartoon in it once, and there's this guru figure sitting on the top of a mountain with the loincloth, and he's in the lotus position. And this wee man with sweating profusely has obviously climbed up the mountain to sit at the feet of this guru. And the guru is saying, don't drink, go to meetings. You know, which I thought was classic. You know. Why, but it does give you so much more than just not drinking is the basis, but it gives you so much more than that. As I say, you're able to enter into life fully,
yeah,
and experience all sorts of things, you know. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a personal dimension, which is kind of, it's hard to put into words, but it gives you a great, great satisfaction, great contentment, you know, most of the time.
Ah, that's it, yeah. Going to start to land the plane here and slowly wrap up.
Yep.
As a way to do that, I couldn't let you leave today without talking about this idea of taking it one day at a time.
Mm.
Because for me, one of the greatest gifts recovery has given me is forcing me to take it a day at a time. And then after passing through that crucible, learning to really, really enjoy each day as it comes. Not get too caught up in what's gone before or what's going ahead.
Yeah.
And even just very practically speaking, I always like to try and keep things practical. See, even for something, we became parents in the last 2 years. See, even just with something like parenting, see the ability just to be present and take each day with your daughter has been, I don't think I've been given a greater gift than that, to be honest with you.
You're a very lucky man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a day at a time is the key to the whole thing, you know, to Alcoholics Anonymous, just live completely in the day, you know. At the start, obviously, it's a tremendous thing where you can say to a person, just don't drink today, you know. And if the day's too long, narrow it down.
Yeah.
We get half a day, take it an hour at a time. It's a tremendous boost to somebody coming at the start of the thing. Oh, I only have to get through today.
Mm-hmm.
But for all of us, you know, like myself included, to try and stay in the day is it's a great thing. It's not easy, but it's a tremendous thing to do. It works on so many levels because I'm sober today.
Mm-hmm.
But the great thing is when I can guarantee you that I won't drink today.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing statement to say.
Yeah.
You know, I read a good thing there recently. A guy said, he wakes up every morning and his first thoughts are, I'm alive, I'm sober, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and that's a good way to start the day.
Yeah.
And it is just for today, no matter what challenge you come across, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing, A, didn't originate any of these things, but has drawn them together in a very, I think, a uniquely practical way.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
Yeah.
Which is the main thing.
One of the other things I really felt obliged to cover for a certain type of person listening is the idea of relapse. A lot of us on our way up the mountain will experience relapse. It's a relatively common part of the journey. What would you say to someone who is experiencing that now? And in general terms, how is relapse treated or navigated in the AA community?
Oh, well, people are just welcomed back. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a group in California, a guy I know is of good memory, they're known as the Golden Slippers. Like in AA, it's called having a slip.
Okay. You know,
relapse. These guys are called the Golden Slippers.
Right.
They all had a certain number of relapses before they achieved sobriety. It's not necessarily, you know, a lot of people don't ever experience relapse. You know, that's the whole basis of AA. But if it does happen, people are welcome back. They're just told, come back to meetings as soon as possible.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no judgment. Okay, yeah. So what? You can start over again.
Uh-huh.
You know, day at a time. Start right now. And you can recover from right now. So people are welcome back with open arms. And some people, it does take them a couple of times to become convinced, you know. They can use it as a stepping stone, but it's better if you don't.
Absolutely.
What you're told in AA is, if you feel like taking a drink, before you take the first drink, lift the phone, speak to somebody. AA is available 24/7.
Wow.
You know. You make a lot of friends, and right from first meeting, people will give you their phone numbers. That means they're available to you on a 24-hour basis.
Wow.
So if you want to phone somebody at 4 o'clock in the morning before you take the drink, if you phone afterwards, you might get a great, you know, you might get short shrift.
Yeah.
But you can phone somebody and say, listen, I'm having a bit of a rough time here. Can I talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
And the person will willingly talk to you or meet with you.
Yeah.
So that's the advice you're given, which it's a tremendous asset to have.
Absolutely. Like we've said multiple times, the community is just so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah. Doesn't matter, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. They're more than willing.
Yeah.
Because somebody's done it for them, so they're going to do it for you.
Mm.
Yeah.
You wanted to read something else before we move into the final.
Well, it's just to say, people do have misconceptions about AA. You see things on TV.
Yeah.
I have to be very careful watching the TV. Because you're watching some drama, and the next thing they're at an AA meeting, and my TV's in danger. Because it's just not accurate, shall we say.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's just a personal point. What AA doesn't do, We don't recruit members or furnish initial motivation for alcoholics to recover, as we've discussed. We don't keep membership records. We don't follow up or try to control the members. We don't make medical or psychological diagnoses or prognosis, provide hospitalization drugs or medical or psychiatric treatment. AA doesn't provide housing, food, clothing, jobs, money. There are other agencies that do that. We don't provide domestic or vocational counselling. We don't engage in or sponsor research. We don't affiliate with social agencies, although we do cooperate. We don't offer religious services. We don't engage in any controversy about alcohol or other matters. We don't accept money for its services or contributions from non-AA sources, or we don't provide letters of reference to parole boards, attorneys, court officials, schools, businesses, etc., etc., you know.
I love all this because it's so well thought out. Mm-hmm. And like I've said this one other time in this conversation, the proof is in the pudding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2 million plus recoveries around the world.
Yeah. If you need help, you just go and see the appropriate organisation. There's another thing I was just reading about today about us being fully self-supporting.
Mm.
There's a limit to how much each individual AA member can contribute in a year. And even if somebody leaves money in a bequest, if they're non-AA members, it gets turned down completely.
Wow.
Or if you're an AA member, say I was to expire tomorrow and leave my millions to AA.
Your Bahamas pot.
I've done well in recovery. Collective poverty, they discovered, is good for us as an organisation.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And it's clearly working.
Aye. Yeah. As you say, people look at the structure and they say, it has the minimum of organisation.
Yeah.
How can that possibly work? But as it says, the ultimate authority is a loving God who may express himself through our group conscience.
Mm.
Now, everything's dependent on the group conscience. I go to my group. If I'm 2 days sober or 50 years sober, I have the right to participate as part of the group conscience, and the decision gets made collectively.
Mm.
And that really works too. You might think, God, that's a recipe for disaster, but it's not. It works.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing.
It's unique. You see, I always tell people this is, you're in danger here. This is my big hobby horse.
Let's go.
AA is unique in its structure. Yeah. Now, unique means there is nothing else like it. It doesn't mean, you can't qualify the word unique. And sometimes the mistake people make in AA, they get, you know, a big part of recovery is getting into service. It's not just about helping the newcomer. You can get into service. You can. There's a bit of organisation. You can do secretary and go to area and things like that. And they think it's a bit like something else they've been involved in, from maybe high government to the snooker club.
Yeah.
Where there's a structure of authority.
Yeah.
Go back to our triangle again. Ah.
Yeah.
No, Raj, where you work up your way up this. As you work your way up the ladder of success, AA has no CEO or managing director.
Yeah.
You know, the AA is run by the groups, and you can get a title in AA, but all it means is you're more of a servant.
Mm.
You know, you're appointed by the group. You do it for a specific period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You go back and sit in the back seat again when you're finished and listen, because you've got to keep growing. You know, and it doesn't mean you have any authority of any kind.
Brilliant.
And you will be frequently told so by the members. You know, you'll be told that on a regular basis.
Well, I have thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. That's an hour.
An hour.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know from your groups and everything how quickly the time goes when people are talking, but you know, it would be remiss of me not to kind of end here, but, and it's the low hanging fruit, but we'll do it nonetheless. For the individual listening who maybe throughout this conversation, listening to what you've shared, there's been a bit of a light bulb switch on in their head. Maybe in a way it's not too dissimilar from you in the pub around the corner from here. where there's been that moment of clarity. What would you say to that person?
Contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can lift the phone. It's the central office in Belfast. There's a general office in Dublin. Go on the website, alcoholicsanonymous.ie, where you can also obtain a list of meetings. We've been working on Zoom now for a while. Like, AA was able to adjust, obviously, and go on Zoom. They're opening more and more face-to-face meetings again. Mm-hmm. The group I go to has a combination of both. So just lift the phone, ask for help, and you'll receive the help anonymously. Like, if I was to phone the AA office today, AA would offer to have two people on my doorstep tonight.
Wow.
Two members who would call out at my home to speak to me anonymously. Or I could be supplied with the times and venues of meetings, and I could just go along, again, anonymously. And you'll always speak to someone first. You know, most groups won't plunge you straight into a meeting. They'll let you talk. Again, the whole basis of AA, one alcoholic sharing, they'll let you talk to somebody first.
Mm.
And that's how you can approach it.
Perfect.
So just reach out. You know, the hand of AA is always there. That's the thing they say. The hand of AA is always there. All you have to do is reach out and ask for it.
Yeah.
And there it is.
And for anyone listening, I'll work with Alan and the team to put links to the website and the phone number in the description of this episode. So wherever you're listening to it, be it on the website or on Spotify or on Google or on Apple or if you look in the wee description box just on your phone here, you'll see a link to that website and the number straight away if you'd like to take that first step after listening.
I think there's also a questionnaire on the website, isn't there? That you can go, you know, if your questions which you ask. I'm nearly sure that's there. I was looking at it the other day. Mm. If you're in doubt, you can answer these questions honestly.
Mm.
You have to answer them honestly to yourself.
Yeah.
And it could help you in making your mind up. But I should have mentioned AA has open meetings. Most meetings are closed for members of AA, but we occasionally have open meetings, which is simple. They're open to the public. People come along who are in the medical profession or social workers can come along. Anyone can attend an open meeting. So by going along to an open meeting of AA, you're making no kind of declaration about yourself. You can pretend you're a social worker, a nurse, or just say, I'm here to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can listen and hopefully get that identification.
Mm-hmm.
So I should have mentioned that if you want to go along to, again, the open meeting.